Hello and welcome to Geezers of Gear episode number 237. Thanks for joining us today. So today's podcast is brought to you by Stratum Productions. At Stratum, they go beyond being just your everyday supplier. They're your lifelong collaborator, team visionary, and architect of immersive experiences. Their mission is to captivate audiences, communicate powerful messages, and forge genuine connections among human beings. They would love to learn more about you and your events by partnering with you and your team. You can connect with Stratum on social media or by visiting their website at stratumpro.com. Today's podcast is also brought to you by Rho Visual. You don't have to sacrifice quality when it comes to investing in LED displays suitable for outdoor use. The Vanish ST series is a line of LED panels from industry-leading Rho Visual, engineered to excel in a wide range of applications. The outstanding outdoor live event solution is a continuation of the audience-favored Vanish series, which began with the transparent V8T design. The models are compatible with one another, meaning you can maximize the usability of existing rental stock. The VST series is available in a solid panel with pixel pitches from 4 to 6 millimeter. The lightweight design packs a punch with a maximum brightness of 5,000 nits and a 10-degree curving radius via its built-in curving blocks. The Vanish ST panels come in full half and quarter panels, catering to a myriad of design preferences. The outdoor-rated VST panels have integrated wind-bracing frames, making them wind-load resistant up to 45 miles per second. This ensures audience safety while keeping structural stability in mind. So whether you are preparing for a musical tour or a large-scale outdoor event, your Vanish ST LED panel is up to the challenge. For more information on Vanish VST and other LED solutions, visit rhovisual.com. That's ROEvisual.com. And I'm back. Thanks again for joining me, episode number 237. And thank you for supporting all of our sponsors. I know when it's companies like these, like all of our sponsors who are pretty great, it's easy to support them, but we appreciate it and they appreciate it. Our sponsors keep coming back, so you're doing a great job following them and supporting them and helping them and buying from them, etc. So thanks again. So once again, today's episode is 237. I've probably said that 5 times, but it's still shocking to me that I've done 236 of these already, and we keep going. We're booked solid right now with guests until I think mid-June or something. We're booked pretty far, and Sarah's getting calls almost daily right now for new guests, so it's amazing. We appreciate it. If you're listening to this and you want to be on the podcast, reach out to producer at geezersofgear.com. That will get you to Sarah. She'll get you into the screening and then booking process, and we'll try to find a date that fits for you. So thanks. So today's guest, Glenn Rogeman, was last on the podcast in 2019. And obviously, things are very different than 2019. In some ways, they're very much the same again, but a lot has happened since that time, obviously. It's funny, it's like an apocalypse or something. When you look backwards at 2019, it's like, whoa, you know? So, but yeah, feel free to check that episode out. It's number 35, very early in our time as well. So, I know COVID impacted his business. I'm looking forward to hearing about that. Knowing Glenn as well as I do right now, I'm assuming that it was all positive impact. Everything was perfect, and we We cured COVID, jokes aside. But, Glenn is a promoter. He's a great sales guy, and I look forward to having that discussion. And I know that Glenn's notoriously well funded. You can tell by all of the businesses he has. They're all beautiful. His building is beautiful. His parties are notorious. The Christmas party, the customer appreciation event, or whatever it's called that they do every year, is incredible. It's again notorious. So he's quite well funded, but still, I think COVID pushed the limits on everything, and I think that AED might have even closed. I think they closed a location in Asia at one point, but it since that time, since COVID, they've just expanded like crazy. They're flying high and growing like crazy, and so. So of course today's guest Glenn Roggeman is the CEO of the AED Group. He founded AED in Belgium in 1985 as a dry hire rental company for lighting and sound equipment. Today, the AED Group is a major player in the audiovisual market in Europe, employing more than 300 people in 8 countries: Belgium, the Netherlands, Germany, France, United Kingdom, Italy, and I think most recently the UAE. We're going to talk about the new facility that they have there, and from what I hear, they're doing really well. In 2013, Glenn acquired AED Studios and transformed it into the most eco-friendly entertainment complex, catering to film and TV productions, show rehearsals, and corporate events. Sorry, I keep looking down because something's flashing at me on my control system here. Glenn also founded, or AED also founded, an audio brand, lighting brand, trussing, and so much more. So please, before I break something, welcome back, Glenn Roggeman. Hello, Glenn.
Good evening, how are you?
Good evening for you, afternoon for me. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Fine, I'm thinking about the high tea because you're in the afternoon, I'm in the evening, but high tea, we're fine.
Well, or a glass of wine or something. You probably have a nice glass of wine sitting there, I'm sure. So, yeah.
Moment, my glass is empty, but I hope it will be filled up in.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. I'm sure it will. Probably just as you said that, there's a whole room full of people who are scattering around trying to find you a glass of nice red wine. So
My
I.
fiance driving to the supermarket and she's back in 1 hour. I'm just arriving.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah.
So
So,
here it's 8 p.m.
geez. Yeah, here it's, I don't even know what time. It's 2 p.m. So, yeah, 6 hours. So, you were last on my podcast in 2019, and a few things have happened since 2019, obviously. Life has changed considerably. I think the market is back to sort of a familiar place at least, but I want to talk about some of these changes. And of course, in 2020, the world changed in a pretty big way, and both of our lives, I know, changed. I think you were probably better prepared for it financially than I was, and then a lot of businesses in our industry were. As you know, our industry are not necessarily always the most financially savvy people, perhaps. We come from, sort of a passionate place where one day you're an artist and you're doing these beautiful lights or this beautiful sound or whatever, and next thing you know, you're accidentally a businessman. And then next thing you know, COVID hits and you're like, well, what the hell am I supposed to do, And like I know over here, I became a friend and a consultant and a commiserator, I don't know what you would call it, to so many business owners here. And one of the common things was, in school, or my accountant or whoever told me that I should have 60 days of cash reserves. And that's generally a pretty conservative practice, I guess, but nobody had 18 months of cash reserves, So yeah, I mean, AED is a big machine though. When you had to shut that machine off, I'm sure it was a little bit frustrating and painful?
So first of all, yes, our industry is packed with people with passion, but also with a lot of knowledge, a lot of knowledge about technology. But for me, our industry, it's like a translator of an artist on stage to 10,000, 50 or 100,000 people hearing and looking to this artist. So our industry is wow. And yes, our focus is a lot on the passion of technology. And sometimes our industry forgetting the financial side, that's true. And I think COVID has helped our industry to evolve in a better understanding of financial needs of a company. So cash is a dirty word, but you need to have cash flow. You need to have reserves to absorb negative impacts like Corona.
Yeah.
So at IAD, were we prepared for this? Yes and no. Yes, we are financially a very strong company. Yes, we have an ultra low debt ratio compared to our assets. But it was still challenging. Maybe like some of you knowing it, who are listening to us, I own also one of the major studio and television in Europe. So I own 16 film stages. It's about 500,000 square foot IAD studios. So there I know a little bit of the film industry and of also Netflix and all the other digital in the world. So when there were less entertainment, live entertainment events happening, there were way more demand for film and soaps of recording. And maybe some of you know, we have about 10,000 soft lights in our rental inventory park, about close to 100 miles of trussing, close to 150 kilometers of trussing, corners, circles, all the beautiful things to create rigging. And we rented a lot to the film industry and to the television industry and long-term projects. Also, before COVID hit Europe 19 March 2020, everything went on lockdown.
Yeah.
But I was preparing my company from December, middle of December. I was preparing my company because I always thought if our industry is hit by something drastic, like Corona, it will be very difficult for my customers. So I need to try to find a solution where my customers, the AV, rental houses, production houses, can have a unique advantage. So I designed like smoke machines with air disinfections.
Yeah.
I designed like ultrasonic high frequency, not ultrasonic, but ultra high frequency that can eliminate bacteria in the air. And I designed also face plugs problems for the air dispersion, because the air industry, from air codes and ventilation, they were doing something wrong. And this is why everybody in the world, when they visit an upkeep bar, the dirty air, what is circulated in the building, is reused and they heat it up and blow it on the people. So it's like a germ spreading machine.
Yeah. Another, like an airplane.
Yeah, that's really, if you understand something about aerodynamics, I'm a pilot, so I understand.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare, but all the world accepted like it is. And a lot of us had Corona. So I designed in ultraviolet air disinfection, and I was on the market with production capacity from April, 1 month after lockdown, had a supply chain under control. But when I started to talk with the government in Belgium in February, they were laughing with me. And in April, they were still laughing with me. And in May and in June, they were all laughing with me because they told to the world, it's on your hands. If you open the door, be afraid to open the door. Be afraid to give a handshake.
Yeah.
Hey, aerodynamic, you cannot have so big impact. It must be airborne. And this is why I started developing bone-borne air disinfection systems.
Yeah, you were very quick to market with, I think it was all under the Luxibel range, right? I remember your products were very, very early to market. I was working with your North American distributor over here on a bunch of opportunities. But yes. You said that you were preparing beginning in December. So what did you know in December that you didn't tell me? Why didn't I know in December?
If you analyze that China was deciding the second week of the first week of December to build large-scale hospitals, intense but ultra-large scales, you were knowing there's something wrong. So it was hitting Europe in the publicity quite hard in January and February, but in February you still had ISE going on, strangely, because it was everywhere in the air.
Yeah.
But you had a long incubation time before people was getting ill. And so for me, analyzing what happens in November and December in China, I told very fast, it's airborne, and I will put my money where my thought is, and I will start designing it. Middle of December, I started. At the end of December, first smoke machine with particles in it that disinfect air. Then in end of January, I had a sound generator who makes a lot of noise, but who kills germs. The problem with all that, it was not very stable and you cannot use it everywhere. So in February, I was doing tryouts with ultraviolet. So the 254 nanowavelengths light fixtures, light tubes, where you have an exposure time of 80 milliseconds. If the air runs over the bulb, less than 6 centimeters. So I designed that. I let it checked by TÜV and had a 99.96% rate of killing of germs. So it was extremely effective.
Yeah.
The only thing, nobody was telling that it's in the air. Everybody was telling it's on
But Glenn, even really smart people, like when Italy got hit so hard early on, a very smart friend of mine in Italy called me and said, Marcel, I got to tell you something. And I said, what? And he said, buy as many gloves as you can, because Italy's running out of gloves. Buy pallets and pallets of gloves.
No, I can laugh because it's a joke.
I laughed then. I said, I'm not wearing rubber gloves. So if I'm not going to wear rubber gloves, why would I buy pallets of rubber gloves to sell to people? You know, this is crazy.
Masks. So, yes.
Yeah.
But the downside of masks, that your immune system of your body gets down because you don't have a lot of germs getting in. So your immune loses force.
Yeah. Plus, none of the masks fit well enough to really solve the problem anyways. You're solving a small part of the problem, not a big part. But it became so, people became so angry about the whole topic. So this was another thing. It was a pandemic of bad information as well, from both ends, regardless of your political affiliation or whatever. It became a real problem for good information.
The World Health Organization came online about air transmitting of germs or virus or bacteria in August 2020.
Yeah, that's
So,
crazy.
like 5 months later, then they locked everything down. Like 9 months later, that they knowing we have a problems. What? So, but coming, how did I survive? By doing other stuff. I was the guy talking with politics about air disinfection, and I was hoping that all my customers, I have about 2,500 customers, AV, professional users, that they grab this, use this, sell this, make a profit on it. I had even cannons to do stadiums. I was thinking, hey guys, invest in it, rent this to events, tell it to politician, and we can change the world. The thing is, nobody's waiting for that. We have all passionate people, but sometimes our industry is very creative, but also very narrow-minded. So
Well, the other problem, Glenn, none of
I
us
didn't
knew
buy
how.
AV companies. I sold a bunch of them everywhere in the world, but not, and that's a
But part of the thing was our industry could only think about when are we going back to doing shows. And so that window started at sort of 90 days, like from March, people were thinking by June or July, we were going to be back doing shows. Not 2 years,
I was the guy telling it will take the world and the politics and the economy 2 years. When I was talking to my banks, they were all laughing with me. Try to imagine, I had like $100 million standing open, leasing contract, where my customers need to pay me. I was flying leasing to the AV industry in Europe, and no one would pay. And my bank told me it's simple, you can pay up. So I
Oh
pay all the debts from all my customers,
my goodness.
because the banks were telling, yeah, in 2 months it's normal, in 3 months it's done, this summer everything is normal, yeah, in September it's normal. So it was all the time, yeah, in 1 or 2 months it's normal. And I told, no, it's 2 years. And we were in problems in our industry. But coming back, how did we survive? We rent a lot to film and television.
Well, how did that work though, Glenn? Like, were you still, you were still, the studio was still fully operational and you had staff working there and stuff? Because over here, I mean, everything was pretty much shut down because it was California and the politics said you have to close, basically.
Correct. We were closed in the studios for 6 weeks. And after 6 weeks, you had a limitation of distance and blah blah. But we were doing film sets and soaps there. But also, thanks to that, there were a lot of studios all over Europe making more and more episodes and more Netflix and Amazon and Prime, what is all that? And they had the need. So at one moment, we had more than 8,000 light fixtures out in film in Europe. And also the UVC, I sold a lot everywhere in the world, besides in Belgium. And besides to our network, to our customers, I had new customers buying from me, no companies, airco companies in other states, in other countries. So we were still hitting above 50% of our turnover in the group. And that was quite amazing if
That
you
is
know our
amazing. Very impressive.
8%
Wow.
worldwide. And we were hitting above 50%.
Very good. Yeah, that's so much better than the industry as a whole. I mean, again, you said it. Our industry is so creative and the people in it are so creative. So I had a weekly Zoom call that I was doing for our industry for company owners and lighting designers and sound engineers. It just started as a happy hour where we would all have a glass of wine on Wednesday afternoon and just talk. And then it became like 100 people every week, very key people, very smart people. And we were talking about just ways to sustain yourself, ways to sustain your business, and different pivots that people are doing to continue their business. But Some of the things, like when people talked about it, I just knew that it was a bad idea and it wasn't going to work. Like drive-in concerts, these drive-in concerts where there were cars parked, I don't know, 10 meters apart or something, and you listen on the speakers on the radio in your car, and there's a band playing on a stage far in front of you. I just knew that wasn't going to work. Like, to me, that's not going to a concert. That you might as well watch it on YouTube at home. It's probably better sound system. And so some of those things that people tried, and even the like XR stage streaming concerts and stuff, like that stuff just for the most part for me didn't work. It wasn't entertainment. I didn't think. Now, like last week, I don't know if you know who Dan Brown is, but he's the former production manager, and now I think he's the creative director or something for Metallica. He's been with Metallica over 30 years. And so they did an XR concert that was really good because they had this screen that went around them in full 360. And it had sort of little micro screens where you could see the audience. So they had thousands of people up on the screen at any time, and he could say, "Look, you Bob in Brussels or whatever, let's rock," and he could talk to people on the screen, or the band could talk to people on the screen. And so the band enjoyed it because it felt like they had an audience, and the audience enjoyed it because it was interactive. But other than that, I never saw it done well.
Correctly. I saw this technology coming from sports industry, where you had sport industry, you had like televisions, like 1,000 televisions installed in stadium, where
So
the
terrible. So terrible. Like, what a terrible experience that is. But
but
even for the
cool.
athletes, like I'm a big hockey fan because I'm Canadian, of course, and watching hockey games with no fans in the audience, to me was just so weird. And I can't imagine what it was like to be the players with an empty building, Very strange, very odd. So
So our industry is very creative, very mind-blowing, very flexible, because in Europe you have about 12,000 rental houses, completely in Europe, production houses, 12,000. And they were not 100 going bankrupt. No. So they stick it out. They survive the cut. And
most,
that's
yeah.
because even when they had cash flow problems, even if they had bad debt at the bank, they were doing everything to survive and did really did a good job. And they came back strong, powerful, creative, flexible. And that's something that I love about our industry, the
Amazing,
creative,
yeah.
the
Yeah.
flexible, the positive.
Well, you were in an interesting position, as you just mentioned, coming out of COVID, when you were carrying so much paper. And did you end up, were you in a position, and this might be something you don't even want to tell me, but where you had to write off a bunch of that paper, or did everyone just find a way to catch up? How did that work?
I think it's a mixed emotion answer. So first of all, we rescheduled the
Yeah.
leasings, so we prolonged it in time. That's one. So we given all our customer, we had about I think 500 dossiers, 500 leasing contracts, and we made the meeting with all of them. Sometimes 200 days, sometimes 300 days, and we rescheduled or reframed time frame of the leasing. So this was a big help for a lot of those customers. That's one. Two, yes, I've written down bad debts. So I thought I written down like $20 million of bad debt or 50. But now it's getting back because thanks. In our bookkeeping, we write it down, but with our customer, we discussed how we can do it. We don't want to push them in bankruptcy, so we reprice structure their finance deal, and we prolonged the time. So when they didn't have the capacity for 20 months of payment terms, we added 22 months with the interests.
Interesting.
So yeah. I think we were there to help all our customers and not to push them in bankruptcy and taking over then at the peanuts their shares.
Yeah.
I know a few companies that done that. I think sometimes IAD is too clean, too honest, too original, and too gentle. We are not aggressive on the market. Our price is our price. Everybody shoots in our price and want to rent their equipment cheaper than us. That's not IAD. IAD is a partner, a loyal one. We don't do productions already 39 years. We are there to help production company achieving their goals. Is it technical wise? You need 1,000 line arrays for to doing the Pope somewhere? Or is it financially wise? You need to spread your package, your finance again, or you have assets, way too much assets, and you want to sell them in one go. Even there, we can help our customers.
Yeah.
That we take here in our occasion platform, and we can or resell new equipment or not.
Well, I think one of the problems is, you know, coming out of COVID, if you're too aggressive on the financing, instead of carrying paper, you're going to be carrying old product because people will return product. And this was one of the problems I saw, is because, you know, I know companies who came out of COVID with boxes that were brand new, not even opened, of moving lights, for example. And let's say it's a version 2, and now 2021, 2022 happens, and the company released version 3, and I haven't even opened the boxes for version 2 because I got them right before COVID. You know, I got them at the end of 2019. So, you know, carrying paper, I think, is probably more, you know, efficient or effective than carrying old inventory in some cases, especially when you don't have control over the release dates from the manufacturers and stuff. And some of these manufacturers really struggled. Like if you look at, you know, MA Lighting, they launched the MA3 and then COVID happened. And, you know, they didn't have a lot of time to get people on board with the MA3. And what that did is that created a lot of sales for 3 years of the MA2. And, you know, MA2s, we were selling used MA2s on GearSource during COVID for $12,000 to $15,000. By the end of COVID, by early 22, those same consoles were selling for $30,000. They went way up.
But then they went...
Not yet. No, they're still $18,000 to $20,000 for a full-size MA2.
Okay, that's a lot.
Yeah, they're
of
still
money.
Good. Yeah. Yeah.
Investing that.
Yeah, but the point is that you know, some companies I think just got screwed a little bit on their timing with release dates of product and so, you know, they either had a product just ready to release and COVID happened. And now you're holding on to sort of older technology for a couple of years while your competitors might be investing heavily in R&D and creating new products. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess for me, the manufacturers, how they came out of COVID was completely different than what I expected. Like, I didn't think all of the moving light manufacturers would be able to survive. But not only were they able to survive, they were able to thrive. Like they sold every light that wasn't bolted to the ground. They sold it in 2021 and 2022. It was just such a crazy market for a couple of years there. So
even let's hope. You had problems in supply chain. There were more demand than production capacity.
Yeah.
At El Acoustic, you had some products with 2 years waiting time.
Yeah.
At Grand Emma today, I think almost 2 years waiting time.
It's 18.
So try to buy 500 motors. that's a massive big problem if you want to have them in 4 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really hard.
And
Yeah.
why I started my own brands.
Yeah, then you can control some of those things.
Production.
Well, production capacity is an interesting one because I remember, oh, probably end of 22, I spoke with what's his name? Oh, James Gordon, the CEO from Audiotonix, the Digico, basically. And I spoke with him and he said, you know, sales are not our problem. Capacity is our problem. Like, you know, we're getting a longer and longer and longer and longer back order. And even supply chain by that time wasn't a problem. It was still capacity, just trying to catch up to what the demand had done. And then the problem is, and you know this as a businessman, so you look at the demand and it's sort of a false demand because you're still trying to backfill. And so you don't want to just triple the size of your operation, you know, and create a much larger manufacturing facility so that you can hit that demand. But you also can't go on forever disappointing your customers and saying, yes, I can get you the new quantum whatever console. It's going to take 18 months. You know, they're going to buy something else at some point because if the need is here right now, like I can't wait 18 months. So it's an interesting problem. I mean, you said it already. You said our industry in many ways got smarter because of COVID. And I think a lot of companies, mine included, had to learn some really hard financial lessons. And, you know, because many of our companies, unlike yours, many of our companies are really small. And we don't necessarily have 10 accountants on staff who are geniuses. You know, sometimes we might just have a part-time CPA who works from a tiny little office in the back of their house and doesn't know how to give you the best advice, perhaps. And so I think there were a lot of mistakes made. Unfortunately, as smart as we've gotten, I think in some ways we've gotten dumber. And, you know, especially as the market got really, really busy over the past couple of years, I've seen companies who were making a lot more money than maybe they should be, perhaps. Maybe they're sort of living outside of their comfort zone or outside of their, you know, their knowledge level or whatever you want to call it, but it looks like money's just falling from the sky. So they're starting to buy houses and cars and boats and all of those things instead of really focusing on protecting their business so that it can survive if something like this happens again, right? Or anything happens again. So it's an interesting lesson.
I can tell you from the top 25 companies in the world, three were asking me to have a cut down on their payment. So they were having an outstanding debt of, let's say, something in between $500,000 and $2 million. And from the top 25, 40% of them were asking, hey, can you cut down? Then I will pay faster and blah, 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 la, la, la. I've done it with a few of my major clients. I done a cut down of their invoice, and then they signed with me a payment term in 36 months of their invoices that all the equipment was rented out 3.5 years before that it was paid, and then a cut down of, for example, 20%, because otherwise they maybe could go bankrupt. And I'm telling now, from the top 25 companies, three of them, you know what? What is a pity? So we help those companies, and they are not loyal. That's something that shocks me a lot. I'm known in Europe to be a strong and a hard businessman. No, I'm a human being. So, and come to me with your hands open and everything goes. But if you help somebody in life, for me, it's normal that they stay after it loyal, or they find a way to pay you back. Zero of those three.
Wow, that's terrible. Well, you know, you're in a unique position, because quite often we go to our customers or whoever, and we say, hey, look, I'm not a bank. Stop treating me like a bank. But in a sense, you are a bank. You know, this is the position that you stand in. And it's one of the many benefits that AED offers to their customers is, you know, some financial solutions, leasing and things like that. So,
we buy your equipment back, and you can buy new equipment or anything, sale and lease back.
Yeah.
And we lease back new kit. We do it every month.
Yeah.
For
interesting. So this year, you've owned the company 39 years. You founded the company 39 years ago, which is incredible. It makes you start to feel a little bit older when you think of things like that, because you remember, I'm sure, when you started the company. Are you planning anything big for the big 40th anniversary next year?
The answer is yes. I'm planning something big, something commercially big, something as a party big. So all my loyal customers who are working with us will have a benefit of our 40 years of IAD. But that's something for next year.
Yeah.
I'm still living in this year.
But it's funny, because I know you love a good party, and you know, your big customer appreciation events and stuff are, you know, I talked about it in the intro today to the recording, you know, notorious. Like, you're notorious for throwing a big event and a big party and a big celebration, and you're good at it. You know how to do it.
That's something I respect all my customers, from the smallest one to the most largest one. And that's something that I give back to my customers. The last 10 editions, or the last 10 years, 8 editions, there were about in between 20 to 23 countries, and about 800 to 1,500 companies visiting. Wow. Our party, always in the middle of December. And you have people from anywhere in the world. And that's something what is nice to see, that our industry, we have a common passion. And the best friends you can make with a common passion, if it's soccer, or it's in the army, or it's driving old-timers. If you have a common passion, you can build the best friendship. Or playing tennis or padel, something new in Europe. But you find connection with people who's got the same passion. And sometimes in my industry, I'm missing that.
Yeah, I know what you say. And especially, you know, you and I come from a similar generation. And so I always hate to say, but young people today are different. But it's true. You know, young people today are different. And, you know, when we were young, the way that we did things to gain business or to take care of our customer or whatever, we have a different mindset when it comes to that stuff. Newer, younger companies or younger salespeople, younger business people today, it's different.
For me, my word is much more important than 1,000 contracts. My word is written in stone if I say something.
Yeah.
And that's the case with some other people.
Yeah.
But normal, so what I find normal, I expect it back. And that's something I need to get used to. Even after 39 years, I'm not ready to accept it. I'm ready to accept the good in everybody. I'm ready to accept the passion. I'm ready to accept the technical challenges that our industry is doing.
Yeah.
I accept negativity. I don't accept breaking your word. I have it. That's, if you ask me, what do you hate? That's maybe my top three written.
You know, It's funny because as you're saying it, I like my girlfriend tells me all the time, like, your biggest problem is you trust and you believe everyone. And it's true. If you tell me something and you say, this is what I'm going to do, okay, that's it. I don't need a contract. I don't need lawyers. I don't need anything because Glenn told me that's what he's going to do. And this is
Yes.
how I've always been. And I've been this way with business partners, with employees, with, all kinds of people. And unfortunately, it has hurt me many times. It has caused me a lot of problems. So.
Financially, but it had cost me also emotionally. I had in the past one of my best friends who was also an associate in the ID group. And I found them stealing, but really stealing a lot. And I split it. I never talked to nobody about that. It's a divorce with my best buddy and with my, he was a shareholder of 25% of the ID group, or 20%, I don't remember any. But I paid them out completely, to the penny, to the cent, but I divorced from him. Also, friendship.
It's so
And
crazy you say this because I had the exact same situation. It was my business partner in another company, and same thing. He was basically robbing the company from its money, and he owned roughly 25% of the company. Cost me, for me, it was much more painful because it was still relatively early, and I didn't have the money to take care of a lot of the problems and financial debt that he put us in and all kinds of things. It hurt. It probably cost me $2 or $3 million and almost put me out of business. And
it's better that it's costing you $2, $3 million than me. You're like a cathedral. I'm just a small chapel.
You're the Vatican. You're the Vatican. I'm a church in the back of a Mercedes station wagon or something,
What I must say, it's hurting also emotionally as a human being.
100%.
Part of me that a lot of my customers don't know, and a lot of people in our industry don't know, I have about 10 extremely good friends, close buddies like brothers, and I have about 50 friends like that. We don't have time to make our relationship deeper.
Yeah.
And I know, I think about 20,000 people knowing me. But the most important thing in life is not money. The most important thing in life is time that you spend with your family, your kids, your bloodline directly, but also with your brothers. You have friends and you have brothers. Brothers is like a deep emotion that they are ready for you always at 1 o'clock at night, at 3 o'clock. If you phone them and you say to them, I need you, please come here. I'm in this city. That if they ask you, why, that's not a brother, that's a friend.
I agree so much. Yeah, I agree so much. But the problem is, Glenn.
Why? They need to tell you when and where, not when.
My problem is that I confuse those. So I confuse the 20,000 with the, I forget what your next number was, but 100 or whatever it was, and then with the 10. The 10, you really know who those are. Well, one of those 10, by the way, for me, was the one who stole money from me and cost me almost my entire business, So my problem is I'm so naive because at the end of the day, when this happens to me and somebody is disloyal or they steal from me or they cheat me or lie to me or whatever, I'm always surprised and I'm always disappointed, very emotionally disappointed by them. And my girlfriend always says, don't you get angry? And I said, not really. I get disappointed. I get sad, because of the.
Losing money, that's painful. But losing your brother, that even more painful and lose time, something, because money you can earn in life. Brother, sometimes you can make, honest, I have six brothers and three kids and a fiance. Those are my 10 close people. I have six brothers, not brothers, eh? Brothers from another mother.
Yeah, I understand.
But losing a brother, that's for me losing time that I invested relationship together. And again, time is the most precious thing in life. You cannot make time.
No.
You can most richest people in person in life. Time is something of the most important. Time that you spend with people, your kids, your wife, your family, your brothers. Time is unique. And that's a message to all of you that are listening. Don't forget, time you cannot make. Money you can earn. But time, it's ticking away every second of your life. It will never come.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. And one of the things that you should be doing in your business is creating freedom of time, you know, creating freedom of time, freedom of relationships. You know, you want your business to produce whatever it is, whether it's money or space or something that allows you to spend more time with your friends, family, your brothers, as you call it. I mean, that's such a deep point. Jesus, without any wine, I don't even know how to do all of this stuff.
Let's search for a bottle.
I think we should. Yeah, it's a little early for me. It's 2:40 still, so I should probably stay sober for a few more hours.
It's somewhere in the world, 6 o'clock, so fine.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I'll blame you. So you opened, I think you opened this year in UAE, right?
I opened 4 years ago in Dubai, in the Middle East, in the United Emirates. But I bought my land. I constructed my building. I did my interior because I didn't want to make a big company.
Right.
But I want to make the most cleanest, best organized company out there in the Middle East to help our customers achieving their goal. So our focus is not on doing a production because we don't do a production. Our focus is on the assets. So if tomorrow you need 400 speakers on a stand in one model, I can supply that in the Middle East.
Yeah.
So, and in ultra clean condition. And so the Middle East was for me like a journey to develop my own brands and all the rest if they ask for it. So today, I have from IAD Audio alone closely to 1,200 speakers there.
Wow. Damn. And so 1,200 speakers for cross rental or in sales inventory? Oh, cross rental. Wow. That's nice.
Very nice. We just sales also in the Middle East with our first two customers for IAD Audio. They had it just supplied a few days ago.
Interesting. Yeah, so and I don't understand really well, but from what I understand, you have to partner with a Dubai company. Is that how it works? Or
yes and no. It's to see where you open your company. If you want to open it in a freehold, you can be the only shareholder in it. If you want to be the shopping mall, for example, interesting to have a local be involved in your company because he brings also all the visas and for your employees.
Yeah, it just makes it cleaner and easier. Yeah, so one of the things I really want to talk to you a bit about, and I'm sure you want to talk about it too, you have a little bit already, but AED Studios, which, you know, for me is really intriguing for a number of reasons. One, you were one of the early ones to go green in a facility like this. You went very, very green and you did it very early to all LED lighting. And you can tell us more about some of the things that you did to be green. But one of the things that I'm curious about is, was that for environmental or economical reasons?
So first of all, when I talked to people in 2007 about ecology, they were looking to me like a UFO landing on a market, on a town square. So they were looking to me, what are you telling us? And I told, yeah, for me, ecology will go hand in hand with economy. But in 2007, and I bought my first electric cars, Peugeot Ions in 2007. I installed my first solar panels in 2007. I bought like 90,000 LED fixtures, 90,000, for example. On the Copenhagen top in 2007, we supplied all the lighting in LED, but everything.
Which is in interesting because I had an LED business that I founded in 2004. And I can tell you in 2007, it wasn't easy to find like good general lighting fixtures for a building like that. Like you could find color kinetics, color changing fixtures or whatever, but to find commercial grade white lighting was much more difficult.
So I made my own LED
No
tubes
way. You
in
did?
2006 for my warehouses because I couldn't buy something what was good.
Wow.
So I made them in aluminium, maybe over-engineered, because now, about 16, 17 years later, they are all still working.
That's amazing. Yeah.
And they are working like 13 hours a day.
They're
And
probably not very bright though, because back then they were probably 30 or 40 lumens per watt, whereas now they're 150 or 200.
80 lumen per watt,
Oh,
85
really? That
watt.
early?
Yes,
Damn.
but the problem was heat dissipation.
Of course.
So today the LED tubes, they are all made in plastic. But at that time, I was making my LED tube, so like a neon, like a fluorescent tube in a warehouse. I was making this in aluminium profiles with heat pasta that I can cool my LEDs and my drivers. So that's why after 16 years, they are still running.
Yeah, that's very impressive.
If I'm measuring today, it's only giving 70%, 80% of light, but still it's working.
Yeah, no, that's impressive.
And I made 10,000, no, 7,000 or 7 or 8,000 neon tubes, and I installed them in all my warehouses. And at that time, a neon tube of 1 meter 50 was consuming 58 watts, and my LED tubes were consuming 23 watts. So if you calculate by running it 12, 13 hours a day for 5 days in a week, if you see it, it's like $27 per LED tube times 5,000.
Yeah, it's good savings.
$30,000 of less electricity bill to pay every year for the last 16 years.
Yeah, and the math on that stuff, like when I started my LED company early, we were one of the very first LED companies here in the US, and we opened up to, we had at one point 23 locations, and when it became very mainstream, we knew that we weren't supposed to be in the business anymore. When people could buy LED tubes or bulbs or fixtures in Home Depot or in Walmart or in any, then yeah, time to get out of that business. But in the early days, an LED tube, like a fluorescent tube replacement, was around $100. It wasn't cheap, Now that same LED tube is like $3 or $4. So, yeah, the math is very good on replacing fluorescent with LED, replacing incandescent with LED, etc. So, but again, did you do this? I guess it sounds like it was a combination of environmental and economical reasons.
I must be honest, it's a combination. So
Yeah.
yes, I'm a big kids. So what do we leave behind? A big waste of speakers and a big waste of old sewers and a big waste of old apartment buildings in Europe. So I was very early with the mindset, I want to change what I can. maybe I cannot change our industry. I've done my best.
Yeah.
I can change everything what is under my hands, if you understand.
Yes.
So was very fast into heat pumps, super isolation, electric cars, solar panels, batteries, domotica systems. I was extremely fast with that. And try to imagine, yes, it was driven because I'm a daddy, but it was also driven, again, it's way less sexy, but it was driven also financially wise.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's, I mean, paybacks on a building the size of like your studio, the payback could be, well, at the time it was probably 2 years payback, but now it's down like probably 4, 5, 6 months payback on something like that.
Try to imagine it's much more than only a LED tube. It's also emergency lights that I updated. I have updated the 1,900 emergency lights in the studio. They are consuming in the past, like in between 9 to 18 watts per hour, an emergency light is to see which model. Yeah. Today, they are in between 1 to 3 watts.
Yeah, yeah, it's huge savings.
1,900.
Yeah.
Emergency, try to imagine the time, the cost price, the installation hours to pay it. 9,000 light fixtures, so like a fluorescent or a light fixture, 9,000 we updated. And I've put domotica systems in all the corridors and in the studios. For example, if you push the button, the half of the light goes on. But if you keep on pushing it for 5 seconds, 100% of the light goes on.
Oh, interesting.
The most ecologic light is the light that doesn't give light.
Exactly. Well, this is the thing. Like most lighting control systems in the past for large buildings, etc., they started with the lights at full and they wanted to dim them. But with LED, you start with the lights off and you bring them on only when necessary. It's a very different mindset.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very different.
Yeah.
So
something, if you see the film studio, 11, when I started with them, because it was in the past another company, I bought it 11 years ago. The occupation rate was at that time 30%. Occupation today it's above 50. The electricity bill was 11 years ago $1.3 million annually.
Jesus,
it's quite big, eh? $1.3 million. Today my occupation rate is about 100% higher, and the price of electricity in Europe is a little bit higher. So if I didn't do nothing, maybe my electricity bill was in between. But if I see to my invoices from the year 2023, the invoice was below $200,000.
Jesus, that's a huge change. Very positive change. Well, and then when you look at all the environmental things, you know, that the benefits that's providing to the environment, that's all good too. You know, regarding the studio, I don't know how much you're involved with AI. But, and I know you don't call it AI, you call it IE, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's not AI, it's IE.
What's that? Let's call it artificial intelligence.
Yes, artificial intelligence. So have you seen anything about this huge studio complex that Tyler Perry was building over here in the US, I think in LA, and he stopped construction because of AI? Or artificial intelligence. Have you seen anything about this?
Let's say that some things I must be discreet about. But I can tell you there was a strike in America, and I think it's necessary that the strike happens because AI got the capacity to you make a picture from an artist, you put topics of a script, and the AI can make the movie. And at which quality? Oh, extremely high quality. Extremely high quality. So try to imagine a production like a Marvel production or a Disney. Maybe it can be done at a budget divided to 100. What? But let's be real. You go to a film to feel something. You go to a film because you know Tom Cruise from Top Gun 1. So you can make a picture from Tom Cruise and make Top Gear 4, 5, 6, 7 with artificial intelligence. Will it be great? Oh, it will be mind-blowing.
Yeah.
But
it's not Tom Cruise.
You cannot see the difference.
Yeah.
But never forget that film industry, it's all about passion. Film industry is all about humans that are getting older, also Tom Cruise, but you can connect, relate to them because it's a human. Film industry is all about creativity. So if we let AI loose from A to Z and it will learn a little bit, yes, it can make more creative movie, better movies, and but it will be becoming one color movie, because then all the people will stop making movies and their industry will disappear. And in 3 to 5 or 7 years, not new feelings, new waves, new things, because AI will flatten out. Everything will be good. Everything will be the same. At one moment, it will be very good, but...
A bit like technology, though. That's a bit like all technology. Like, you know, iPhones now are all so excellent. Like, I remember when iPhone 1 came, I was waiting in line to get iPhone 2 and iPhone 3. I don't wait in line anymore. Like, I have an iPhone 13 or something, not a 15, because it's not different anymore. It's basically the same shit. They're all really, really good, right? But the thing that I think is really interesting about AI movies, one of the things that I think is really interesting, and this is such a complicated topic, and we're not going to solve anything today, but I wanted to talk to you because you're a smart guy. But I think it's very interesting that we can see Godfather 5 with Marlon Brando in it. We can see Michael Jackson make new music.
Yeah.
We can.
But we need the young Marlon Brando's. We need the Michael Jackson, the new generation, because otherwise AI will be become. If you let AI do everything, it will be wow, 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 wow. And here it will stop. So it will go way faster the next 3 years, the movie industry, or 4 years, and then it will stay the same.
Yeah.
The next 10. So that's something we need people. We need passion. We need real humans on the screen. So it will be a hybrid model where artificial intelligence is used on images, on script writing, but we still never can forget we need the human beings, because otherwise the machines will take over.
Can we stop them? You know, that's the problem. Can we stop them at this point? Like, I don't know.
You know, when we were young, I think we were all Star Wars fan and Star Trek. And you remember you push in the wall and you had your food coming out. And you push another button in the wall, and there was a component, a spare part, being printed 3D. And you flip over something, a communicator. That was the Motorola phone. So 40 years ago, Star Trek was wow. But a lot of things has happened today already in our daily life. And you know what? We find it normal. 40 years ago, that was mind-blowing. that you open something. Tit-tit. Yeah, Spocky, beat me up.
Yeah.
The wall and put out. So again, can we change it? No. It will happen. But with smart people, we can keep human beings being involved in the film industry and being involved in the event industry. I think AI is a game changer when used properly. Good. So a guy that you engage who knows AI very well, you will have people from that side, you will have people from the other side. People that don't use AI. And there will be a difference in pay grade, and I can do nothing about that.
Yeah,
that's the future. But I hope the people that are using a lot of AI that will be smart enough that they understand it's a hybrid model and don't let everything decided by AI.
And I completely agree with that that last statement that you made there. And one of the very simple examples, I know people who for their website, they use ChatGPT to write blogs. And I can spot a ChatGPT written blog from a mile away. I could read three lines and say this was written by ChatGPT. I use ChatGPT to write blogs, but I tell it very specifically what I want it to write. It might take me 10 minutes to tell it what I want it to write and how I want it to write it and who the audience is and how it needs to be output, what language I want it in. And then I will read it and I'll change it even after that. I'll edit it a whole bunch. So instead of the blog taking me 3 hours to write, it might take me 1 hour to write. And it just writes the boring stuff for me, really.
And that's what I'm telling. It must stay a hybrid model. Don't give everything to AI. It must be hybrid. And I hope this side of the human beings that are using in the future more and more AI are smart enough to use it as a hybrid model.
Well, the other thing that's going to happen, Glenn, is the consumer will penalize for AI. So again, using the same blog example, Google will give you, as a web developer or a company, Google will give you better search engine optimization for a personally written blog, and it will penalize you for a ChatGPT or an AI written blog. And Google looks for AI written blogs, and it basically gives you a penalty for that. And so it's already happening. And I think in the movie industry, you're going to pay, you know, $2 or $5 for a ticket to go see an AI movie or $20 to go see a human movie.
Okay, let's make it now a little bit more challenging. If you go to restaurants and you're visiting 10 restaurants, are you always 10 on 10 times happy with the service? Yes or no?
No, never.
So try to imagine there will be human, not the face of a human, but the ergonomics, like fingers and sensing, like the Tesla, like the BMW robot that will hit the market in between $25,000 and $55,000. And it will have a battery pack in between 300 watts and 1,000 watts, or even an extended range 4,000 watts. If you know that a superhuman being got a capacity of 500 watt, but not full time. And let's see that the machine is not so efficient. So you will have a superhuman that can run like the fastest human that will consume 800 watt, got a battery pack of 4,000 watt. That's like 40 times a kilo and a half. Try to imagine this. You will be served perfect on time, perfect position of your fork and knife, perfect your napkin. Would you be rather served averagely or perfectly by a robot?
Robot. I know that's the wrong answer, but I would rather have perfect from the robot, because for me, when it comes to simple life things, like if something could bring me my car every morning and it's always brought up in the same spot and it's always at the same
Clean.
temperature,
Clean.
clean, yeah.
Because he wakes up, he's always awake. He
Yeah.
cleans, he does your garden. It's like a 24-hour home slave.
I think what we're saying, Glenn, is the same thing. Like, basically, AI should support humans, not replace humans. AI should augment humans, not replace humans. And
Correct.
this is
So
how I use it.
I want to be served, maybe by a robot, but I want to be welcomed by a human being.
Yeah. Yep.
So I want the advantage of perfectness, but I want also the advantage of being served by a human. So
Here's a
I
here's another little add-on to that. I want my food cooked by a human chef because the nuances in how a chef might make it today versus last week, even if I ordered the same meal, I don't want it exactly the same necessarily, right? Unless you're going to a fast food restaurant, like a Big Mac at McDonald's should taste the same at every McDonald's. But
I think I'm not on the same page than you. I want my
oh.
food made by a computer, by
Really?
a robot. And I want, if I have a surgery done on my heart or on my
That I
eye,
want done by AI. No
oh yeah,
mistakes. No mistakes there.
6 months or in a year, what 1,000 doctors has learned in 50 years, and in
You're
a
right.
robot.
But here's the difference. We're getting to a really cool philosophical place here. So, with the robot doing your healthcare, your surgery, etc., you want nothing, no variables whatsoever, no variations. You want it absolutely with food, with art, with lighting, with sound. Even sound engineers have different ways of doing things, so there's slight little nuances. And so for me, these are human functions, whereas maybe some of the programming of the lighting console, some at least the most boring, mundane things, could be done by AI, but the actual running of the show should be done by a human, because if the drummer plays a little faster or a little slower or something happens like that, you want the human to adjust for that, not an AI.
So coming back from the cook, I want a robot cutting my food. I want a robot preparing everything.
Good
Hybrid
point.
model. And the last thing, I want the cook doing the
Exactly.
magic.
The magic.
Yes.
Exactly. No.
So again, I'm talking hybrid. So I
Yep.
believe very strongly in a hybrid model. And I know there are people watching this or listening to this and say, oh, I don't want a robot doing surgery on me. I can tell you, if you have an eye surgery be done, I hope it's a robot because he doesn't shake and he will take out your lens on a precision of a 50 or 100 of a millimeter, and no human being can do that with his hand.
Well, there is a, I think it's, yeah, a very good friend of mine in our industry, and I won't mention his name, but he had life-saving cancer surgery. I believe it was prostate. A very, very new thing that they do, but it's done by a robot. And it's a brand new robotic surgery that's done and saved his life. And 10 years ago, he probably would have died from this cancer. So, yeah. Have you seen just finally to get off of this AI conversation, but have you seen Sora?
The movie?
No, Sora is a it's an AI that's made for generating movies. Just when you get a chance, Google Sora. And there's a few short films that they've made. You won't believe your eyes what you're looking at. It's just crazy the stuff they're creating with it.
Least, they are investing their self in making a software platform to generate movies, and they are extremely far with that. I saw it on the movie festival in Sharjah, It's a new business for them. It's a
Wow.
big fest about creativity and photography, and now there's a big part already film and television, and it's mind-blowing how far they are today with that.
Yeah, with everything. So I want you to take just a few minutes because I can't keep you much longer because your family's waiting for you with a big bottle of wine. But tell me about two things. One, AED growth plans for this year and beyond. But also a lot of your, I know you've created some house brands, your own AED product lines, AED Audio, I believe it's called, is it Next Trussing?
Yes.
And Luxibel, I know, is at least one of your lighting lines. I don't know if you have other ones, but you know, give me some idea of where that's all going and tell me a little bit about those brands.
So first of all, the idea of my first speaker was coming from the UK. When I opened ID UK, I visit the gods of audio, so the Britannia Rose,
beautiful.
The Wigwam, the Entex, and those are the gods of live productions. And I was shocked, or the SSEIs, I was shocked to see how many different speakers a rental house got in their inventory. And the record that I saw was 43 different models to reproduce full range audio. 43 models, a box like this, a box like that, a box like that, a box. Ah. And at that time, it was 2006-7, I had a dream to develop, because I started in 1982 developing speakers, and I sold maybe many thousand speakers in Europe. And I stopped in the end of the 80s with manufacturing, because all the manufacturers were making beautiful, affordable speakers. And why did I start back? Because all the manufacturers were making a lot of beautiful speakers. So you need to buy 100 of model A, 100 of model B, 100 of C. And I had a dream, can I not build a speaker that can replace all the functionalities of 10, 20 different speakers by one box? That was my vision, or my mission statement, developing a unit that can replace everything. Not to replace everything, because in our industry you have people passionate about Meyer Sound or about Adamson or about DMB or about L-Acoustic. Please be passionate about them. But if you have 20 other models in your warehouse from B brands, you can replace those 20 models by one unit, ID Audio, and with the sound quality that is up to you to decide. I will do a demo to any of your audience listen. They contact with me. There will be mind-blowing away of the output and of the sound capacity. But again, it's not competitor of the top four brands. It's an addition, not to invest in 5, 10, 15 other speaker models. By having one box, you can do everything. So that was my mission statement in 2006 and 7. And I was giving myself a budget of R&D of 500,000 euro, so $600,000. And I was giving myself 2 years time.
Wow.
I didn't succeed. I opened up, everything's times 5, 6.
Oh my God. That's crazy.
So, it has taken me 12 years, and I was quite almost daily involved with it. But I succeeded in something what I'm extremely proud of. A flexible speaker. What is sounding amazing, and what is doing an amazing pressure output versus size. But you put two together You put two loaves together of this, and it's got capacity of the biggest box in the world. I'm not telling a name, but but you can use it as a standalone with two mics inputs. So that's IDE Audio. By doing IDE Audio, well, I launched it to the market, and then was Corona coming.
Bad timing. When
production, I stopped production. I restarted production in 2022, and in 2022 and 2023, just until now, we sold closely to 5,000 boxes.
Wow.
That's IDE Audio. I made also a budget speaker because not everybody got a budget of a brand. Sometimes you need like a QCK series speakers.
Yeah.
So I made speakers also very flexible, but it's called the Multi 12 and the Multi Sub. Then Luxibel. Luxibel, I'm not here to design a moving head because a moving head is the flavor of the day. And tomorrow it's another flavor. And the day after it's another flavor.
Yeah.
So, but I'm here to design high quality light fixture who delivers light. Is it for a car show, a trade show, a theater, a front light of a festival? This is what I'm doing. Mm. Like L and soft lights in ultra high quality.
Yeah.
I have those with thousands and thousands in my rental inventory. Stage Lift, that's my brand of motors. Stage Lift, we designed a motor made in Europe. It's not a Chinese motor, with one of the top three manufacturers in the world. I had some things that I would love to have, like handles above the motors and handles below the motor. Automatic, you hang it upside down the motor that the chain back flip over without losing time. So simple stuff.
Yeah.
Teflon sides that if you have scratches on it, that it stays a dark color, the motor, and not you see the iron or the aluminium. So designing my own motor, it's now 1.5 years on the market, and I sold already about 3,000 hoists.
Wow.
So hoping to hit this year the mark of 3,000 manufacturers motors this year, and I'm hoping to ramp up next year the production capacity.
Wow, that's impressive.
It's better than not. It's E8 plus motor, the highest level of safety, and I think worldwide the new standard, double brake, safety factor 108. Coming only, I do it in black chains, and I have it in stock. Same IDE Audio, I have today around, it's flipping in between 1,000 to 3,000 boxes any day of the year in stock. So that's also unique that I can supply from stock.
And the AED Audio, so it's a line array package. Your main system is a line array. And are you also doing the amplification, or do you just have a deal with PowerSoft or one of the other?
We design everything. The amplifier module, PowerSoft is making everything. So like an iron plate and put in a box. I buy from Pascal. That's the biggest, one of the biggest components builders in the world of amplifiers. It's the highest grade for me. I buy the module from Pascal. I buy clock chips from Motorola. I buy screens from Sony. So it's coming from everywhere in the world. Assembly here in Belgium. My wood is made in also a company that we acquire in Portugal. My iron is made in Spain. The Pascal is from Denmark, the component. So it's built and designed in Belgium. So coming back, so brand number 4, that's Next. So I was the biggest customer of ProLight in the world. There are a lot of products that was coming from our IDs at ProLight. ProLight went bankrupt when I went out with money. Of the company, so I wasn't involved. A few years later, it was bankrupt. And I tried to buy the name, but there was something happened that I didn't bought it, and I started the next big standard. So today, Next is made in Netherlands, not in Czechoslovakia or in China or somewhere else.
Right.
And I bought also one of the big manufacturers in Europe. It's called Intral. They are based in Netherlands, Venray. I bought the company and they had a very big rental inventory. This was made to the standards of IEDE. And then Intral is renamed now to Next. So Next was a commercial name.
Yeah.
Intral was actually, now everything is Next. And now we were like 10 years ago, the first company with robot welding, the first in the world. Now we are developing a robot line, but from A to Z, from cutting to put on the Europalette by robots. And I hope this is operational in 30 months, and this will keep our production capacity too. Voilà.
Wow, that's amazing. That's a lot.
It's 100% compatible ProLite, but everything we updated it. For example, a B100 truss, the mega truss. At ProLite, the wheels are connected, fixed to the truss. At our place, with the pin, bam, you take away a
Oh, that's
coupler.
smart. Yeah,
So,
that's very smart.
compatible. So I try to be, we are 100% compatible. And I try to advance the product, but being as compatible and standard, but still improvements without people knowing it.
Very interesting. So cool. Well, Glenn, I appreciate you doing this. Thank you so much. It's always fun to talk to you. I think we have to do it sooner this time, not 5 years later or whatever. Plus, we're both getting older, so we have to hurry up, you know. Oh, you don't get
No,
older. No. Yeah.
we young people in our mind, and I hope we stay young in our mind. Getting older is telling, oh, the new iPhone is bad, or the young guys are wrong. For me, the future is in young people, and I hope I'm in the team of the young people, and I'm not in the team of the old people. If you see creativity, the best songs of the Simple Minds, or for Madonna, the best songs were coming when they were 20 years young.
Yeah, it's true.
20. And still today, they are playing those same songs. I was a few months ago, a year ago, at a Madonna show. Wow! But all that I know, and everybody was shouting and singing with them. We're like a virgin and all stuff.
Yeah.
So he is from the youngest generation. So I believe strongly also in a hybrid model where the young generation gives creativity and we as not older people, but as experienced people help them directing their positive energy, their positive mindset, their creativity in a better common future.